At NASA headquarters here in Washington, D.C., reporters, invited guests, and NASA staff members await the arrival of President George W. Bush. In a few minutes, he's expected to make a much-anticipated announcement about the future of the nation's space program. There's been a good deal of speculation about what the president will say, most of it focusing on plans to return humans to the moon, establish a research base there, and then press on to Mars. There's also been a fair amount of debate about the prospective price tag, which could be very steep indeed, and the promise of exploration, which could be a jobs program as well as a spiritual and technical challenge. In a few moments, we'll go live to NASA Washington headquarters for the president's remarks. Afterwards, we'll get reaction from Congress, which will be asked to fund this proposal. And guiding us through this is NPR science correspondent Richard Harris, who's with us here in Studio 3A. Richard, good to see you again.
Likewise.
The White House issued a briefing paper in advance of today's event, so what do we expect the president to propose?
Well, the headlines are, first of all, to create a goal for the space program, which has really been without a goal, for, at least for the manned space program, for 30 years. And it was one of the criticisms of the folks who investigated the Columbia accident. And so that's the headline. The details get a little bit harder to completely parse, but let's go down the headlines of those, too. First of all, there's a commitment to finish assembling the space station by 2010. And then at that point, retire the space shuttle, which there are only three left. And it's an interesting question because those are the only vehicles right now that can keep the space station reboosted and out of trouble coming into the Earth. So there's no word exactly about how the space station will stay up there once the space shuttle is retired in 2010. Then there will apparently be no capability of using American technology to get Americans into space again for a while, because the next vehicle to be developed would be called the Crew Exploration Vehicle, which would fly by 2014. So there's a gap in there, if it happens optimistically, that is, it by 2014. And that's supposed to be a multi-purpose vehicle that will take people back to the International Space Station and also take them to the moon, and a one-size-fits-all vehicle, apparently, which...
So a much more flexible kind of space vehicle than the shuttle.
Well, yes, it can certainly do more than the shuttle. One of the big criticisms about the shuttle was they tried to design a vehicle that would do too many things. And here now they're talking about a vehicle to go back to low Earth orbit and go to the moon. So we can anticipate some people asking whether one size fits all in this case. At any rate, that wouldn't be put in place before 2014 at the earliest. And in the interim, they would want to send some unmanned rovers to the moon, actually get there within the next 5 years, something like what's sitting on Mars today, do some unmanned exploration of the moon. And then people would return to the moon on this crew exploration vehicle as soon as the year 2015 or no later than 2020. So this is a pace only slightly less ambitious than the Apollo program some decades ago. And although, you know, starting with inventing all new technology and so on. So the idea then of the moon is that they would create some sort of a moon base, not necessarily permanently manned, but they're staffed by astronauts and so on, to start to figure out how to use that as a springboard off of which you can go and explore Mars.
Now, any idea of, at least as far as this goes, and we're talking about from now until 2020, how much it's going to cost?
Well, the White House did issue a budget projection for the next 5 years only, and they say that it would cost about $12 billion for the first 5 years. Of that, $11 billion would come from the existing NASA budget. It's not clear exactly how space station would be maintained and the space shuttle would continue to operate if they're finding $11 billion elsewhere in the NASA budget, unless it's from the science programs, perhaps, at NASA. But then only $1 billion of new funding would come in the next 5 years. Beyond that, I mean, the price tag of some of these things would be obviously very large, and they do not specify beyond 5 years where the money would come from.
And the increases in NASA's budget would average, what, about 5% a year, as I've read?
Yes, something along that. Maybe not even quite that, because it's $15 billion a year, and they're talking about another $200 million a year for this particular venture.
Now, as you read over the past years, proposals to do these kinds of things, even, you know, technologically optimistic projections suggested it would cost a lot more than that.
Indeed, the President Bush's father suggested something very much like this back in 1989. And when NASA started to figure out how much it would cost, they came up with a price tag of $400 billion.
But that was all the way to Mars, right?
That was all the way to Mars, although this would be a stepping stone towards that. That's true. Some people said the $400 billion was even a very optimistic estimate. So Yes, there are some people who say this will never happen unless you can have major breakthroughs in reducing the cost of human spaceflight. And it's not clear exactly how you could do that, certainly not in a very short time frame that this schedule demands. But I think it's fairly evident. I'm anxious to hear from the Congress people, but I think it's fairly evident that Congress is not going to approve a program that's going to just mushroom out of control financially.
And the one of the big costs involved in that is just the amount of money it takes to lift stuff off the surface of the Earth and into orbit.
Absolutely. And that price has not come down very much at all. And that's a big price. And then also, you know, maintaining human beings, they're managing to do it okay on the space station, of course, and in space shuttles. But finding cheaper, more efficient ways of doing that, it's not intuitively obvious how you go about doing that.
One thing that a lot of people are pointing out is in terms of this new vehicle that they're talking about, something has to replace the space shuttle, which is aging, as you said, after a couple of accidents. There are only three of them left.
That's exactly right. And if you lose one more, which is not beyond the realm of possibility, unfortunately, that space shuttle program is over. You cannot really even think of a fleet that only has two space shuttles in any practical terms. So something has to happen. And Congress has been debating a orbital space plane, which would have been the next step beyond the space shuttle, but again, just to get to low Earth orbit, not to go off to the moon or anything like that. And Congress has been hesitant because they say, we want to know a grand vision for NASA. Do we really before we commit to building something, we want to know, you know, what are the long-term plans here? Are we just going to maintain the space station? And if that's it, well, then maybe this is the right technology. But if the plans are bigger than that, we want something else.
We're waiting for the president to arrive at NASA headquarters here in Washington, D.C., and make the announcement that NPR science correspondent Richard Harris has been talking about. In the meantime, if you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. The program at NASA headquarters was expected to start in a couple of minute times. It looked like they're running a little bit late. Of course, that hardly ever happens here in Washington, D.C. In the meantime, let's get a caller on the air. And Ron is with us from Stephenville, New Jersey. Excuse me, Michigan.
Hi. I wanted to ask the X-33 Venture Star program that got canceled a few years back. I'd been watching that really optimistically. It had that new high-tech engine and everything on it, and it really looked like it was going to be the thing to replace the space shuttle. Then it got canceled, and I never really found out why it got canceled. I mean, that would, I mean, presumably be the way to go, right?
It was a way to go, perhaps.
Yeah, it was an exploratory system. It was never billed as the replacement for sure for the space shuttle, but it was an exploratory program. And I don't know all the details, but it did run into some technological problems, and they decided that it wasn't worth pouring more money into it. They really wanted to focus on what was really going to be the next step for space shuttle.
Was there another focus for that, or did it just sort of peter out?
It's petered out as far as I know.
It's disappointing.
Thanks for the call, Ron.
Thanks.
As they look ahead to this project, remind us, as we mentioned, the first President Bush proposed a similar program back in, I think, in his first year, which would have been,
1989. It was the 20th anniversary of the first human beings on the moon.
And I think, as you reminded me as we walked into the studio, you and I were here doing that broadcast then.
Indeed.
At the time, it seemed like, another bold vision. Recently, President Bush, the first President Bush, gave an interview where he said, in effect, that he was set up. He thought that this was going to be a lot easier. And then, in fact, he hadn't looked at the final price tag for all of this until it was developed in Congress. And at that point, as you mentioned, Congress sort of gagged at that $400 billion figure. Is this going to be a more closely budgeted, with a cleaner idea of how much it's going to cost from the get-go to avoid that same problem, which would be highly embarrassing to a second President Bush?
Well, I think it is impossible to closely budget a program that's going to take decades and decades and that counts on technological innovation to bring down the costs and so on. I think you can't do it. What you can say is, NASA, here's your budget, and it may grow only modestly year to year. See if you can achieve these goals without getting a whole lot more money. The answer, unfortunately, is probably no, but at least NASA has a central focus that they can, concentrate their efforts on, at least for the manned space program.
But as you also reminded us, when President Kennedy issued his famous challenge before this decade is out to put a man on the moon, there were a lot of technologies that had to be developed for that as well.
Absolutely, and NASA got a blank check for that. Let's not forget that was done largely because of the Cold War. We had to beat the Russians in the space race, and we did. And it was, if memory serves, that was about 4% of the federal budget was going into NASA to make sure that would happen. It really was a blank check for NASA. These days, NASA's budget's less than 1% of the federal budget, and it's unlikely to grow much beyond that.
Interesting that there was an article in one of the newspapers today remarking about how this was sort of completing the vision of Wernher von Braun. He was, of course, the scientist who started working on rockets back in Nazi Germany. The V-2 rocket was the brainchild, largely, of Wernher von Braun, and came to the United States after the end of the Second World War, and instrumental in developing NASA's program and laid out a program for the future.
Indeed. And when you think about it, it makes good sense. You start with a mission to first of all, to Earth orbit, which is what Wernher von Braun suggested, and then maybe build a space station and then go to the moon, and then the next closest body, at least the next closest habitable body or tolerable one, is Mars. And so this has been the vision for a long time for dreamers and for people who say, you know, if you want a long-term vision, these are the logical steps. So yes, indeed, it's when NASA goes through planning exercises, which it does frequently, these are the things we hear about, the return to the moon and mm-hmm. on to Mars.
And it was, in fact, President Kennedy's challenge that took things out of order a little bit. Von Braun first envisioned a space station before going to the moon.
That's exactly right. And it happened in the other order, but for geopolitical reasons, not for technical reasons.
As you look ahead to the challenges, you're saying new technologies, beyond a very important one is to reduce the price of lifting poundage from the surface of the Earth and into orbit. What are some of the other challenges you're looking at?
Well, one of the steps that's proposed here is sending Mars missions perhaps from the moon. And the moon has a lot less gravity than the Earth does, so it's attractive because it would seem that it would take a lot less energy to get something off the moon towards Mars. However, if you've got to pack all the fuel to the moon in order to get something off the moon, you're not actually going to accomplish anything. It's going to be worse than going directly from the Earth. So what exactly the purpose of the moon base is remains obscure unless you can find some way of making energy on the moon to generate rocket fuel. So, I mean,
this is on the issue of whether there's water ice on the moon.
That if you could find a technology that would let you split water ice, H2O, into hydrogen and oxygen, then those can be rocket fuels that then you can recombine and get the energy back out. But you obviously have to find a way of putting in a lot of energy in order to split the water to begin with. That's one. And in terms of getting to Mars, there's a lot of radiation out in space, and it's a long way to Mars. So unless you can find a way to make that trip a lot faster than even the robot probes are going these days.
Or a much better and still very light shield.
Right. You need maybe use moon rocks as shields. But again, that takes a lot of energy to get even those rocks off of the moon and to build a cocoon out of moon rocks to protect you from the radiation. So, I mean, there are daunting medical challenges as well as some of these other challenges that are, you know, of technology. I mean, they're all good things to sort of stimulate people to think.
One of the things that has played a role in this is, of course, the arrival of the rover Spirit, which is now on the surface of Mars. It's been an enormous success, hundreds of millions of people visiting NASA's website to look at the color pictures that are now being downloaded from the rover Spirit. It's just about ready, I think, to trundle out onto the surface after rising itself out of the cocoon upon which it landed. So that's also played an important part in all of this. And, of course, robots would play an important part in the discovery on the moon as well as to Mars. Now the program is about to get underway at NASA headquarters here in Washington, D.C. We're looking at pictures of the auditorium there. President Bush has arrived at NASA headquarters. We're expecting him to be making his remarks. He'll be introduced, we expect, by Sean O'Keefe, of course, the director of NASA. He goes back to, the first Bush administration. He was a controller at the Pentagon and later served as the Louis L. Bantle Professor of Business and Government
Ladies
Policy
and gentlemen,
at the Syracuse University's Maxwell
NASA
School.
Administrator
now to NASA headquarters.
Sean O'Keefe. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
And with that announcement, the crowd at NASA rises to its feet. Administrator Sean O'Keefe is at the lectern.
Good afternoon, and welcome to NASA headquarters. This is a historic day. Throughout my time as a member of the NASA family, the cause of exploration and discovery has never known a greater friend than our president. Through triumph and tragedy, he has steadfastly embraced this cause. Last year, when we mourned the tragic loss of the heroic Columbia crew, the president comforted us all with his eloquent words about the legacy of these remarkable people. A week ago, after the Mars exploration rover Spirit successfully landed in Gusev Crater, he congratulated and entertained our hardworking and sleep-deprived Mars exploration team. But today, we are honored that the President is here to provide his vision for America's continued leadership in that exploration of the space frontier, and to give us his charge to carry out that vision. But first, there's a member of the NASA family who would like to extend his greetings. Please welcome Mike Fole, the commander of Expedition 8 and the NASA science officer aboard the International Space Station.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Fole, Expedition 8 commander and science officer aboard the International Space Station. I would love to be there with you, but when you're flying 240 miles above the ground and moving at more than 17,000 miles per hour, it's difficult to drop in for a quick visit. I can't tell you how proud we are to be part of a project that's the most advanced technology and engineering feat in the history of exploration. Even as a child, I knew I wanted to be an explorer. And while I've flown in space 6 times, I know that I'm just one chapter in an ongoing story of discovery. I feel fortunate to be part of this agency's historic legacy. But I also know that NASA's journey is just beginning. So on behalf of the 8th expedition to the International Space Station, it gives me great pleasure to welcome you to NASA today.
Michael Fole speaking live from the International Space Station. Sean O'Keefe, the director of NASA, is still at the lectern and he's standing next to President George W. Bush.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Thanks, John. Good job. Thank you all. Thank you. Please be seated. Thanks for the warm welcome. I'm honored to be with the men and women of NASA. I want to thank those of you who have come in person. I welcome those who are listening by video. This agency and the dedicated professionals who serve it have always reflected the finest values of our country: daring, discipline, ingenuity, and unity in the pursuit of great goals. America is proud of our space program. The risk takers and visionaries of this agency have expanded human knowledge, have revolutionized our understanding of the universe, and produced technological advances that have benefited all of humanity. Inspired by all that has come before and guided by clear objectives, today we set a new course for America's space program. We will give NASA a new focus and vision for future exploration. We will build new ships to carry man forward into the universe, to gain a new foothold on the moon, and to prepare for new journeys to the worlds beyond our own. I am comfortable in delegating these new goals to NASA under the leadership of Sean O'Keefe. He's doing an excellent job. I appreciate Commander Mike Foal's introduction. I'm sorry I couldn't shake his hand. Perhaps, Commissioner, you'll bring him by, Administrator, you'll bring him by to the Oval Office when he returns so I can thank him in person. I also know he is in space with his colleague, Alexander Kolary, who happens to be a Russian, a cosmonaut. I appreciate the joint efforts of the Russians with our country to explore. I want to thank the astronauts who are with us, the courageous spatial entrepreneurs who set such a wonderful example for the young of our country. And we got some veterans with us today. I appreciate the astronauts of yesterday who are with us as well, who inspired the astronauts of today to serve our country. I appreciate so very much the members of Congress being here. Tom DeLay is here leading a House delegation. Senator Nelson is here from the Senate. I am honored that you all have come. I appreciate your interest in this subject. It is a subject that is it's a subject that's important to this administration. It's a subject that's mighty important to the country and to the world. 2 centuries ago, Meriwether Lewis and William Clark left St. Louis to explore the new lands acquired in the Louisiana Purchase. They made that journey in the spirit of discovery to learn the potential of the vast new territory and to chart the way for others to follow. America has ventured forth into space for the same reasons. We have undertaken space travel because the desire to explore and understand is part of our character. And that quest has brought tangible benefits that improve our lives in countless ways. The exploration of space has led to advances in weather forecasting, in communications, in computing, search and rescue technology, robotics, and electronics. Our investment in space exploration helped to create our satellite telecommunications network and the global positioning system, medical technologies that help prolong life, such as the imaging processing used in CAT scanners and MRI machines, trace their origins to technology engineered for the use in space. Our current programs and vehicles for exploring space have brought us far, and they have served us well. The space shuttle has flown more than 100 missions. It has been used to conduct important research and to increase the sum of human knowledge. Shuttle crews and the scientists and engineers who support them have helped build the International Space Station. Telescopes, including those in space, have revealed more than 100 planets in the last decade alone. Probes have shown us stunning images of the rings of Saturn and the outer planets of our solar system. Robotic explorers have found evidence of water, a key ingredient for life, on Mars and on the moons of Jupiter. At this very hour, the Mars exploration rover Spirit is searching for evidence of life beyond the Earth. Yet for all these successes, much remains for us to explore and to learn. In the past 30 years, no human being has set foot on another world or ventured farther up into space than 386 miles, roughly the distance from Washington, D.C. to Boston, Massachusetts. America has not developed a new vehicle to advance human exploration in space in nearly a quarter century. It is time for America to take the next steps. Today, I announce a new plan to explore space and extend a human presence across our solar system. We will begin the effort quickly, using existing programs and personnel. We'll make steady progress, one mission, one voyage, one landing at a time. Our first goal is to complete the International Space Station by 2010. We will finish what we have started. We will meet our obligations to our 15 international partners on this project. We will focus our future research aboard the station on the long-term effects of space travel on human biology. The environment of space is hostile to human beings. Radiation and weightlessness pose dangers to human health, and we have much to learn about their long-term effects before human crews can venture through the vast voids of space for months at a time. Research on board the station and here on Earth will help us better understand and overcome the obstacles that limit exploration. Through these efforts, we will develop the skills and techniques necessary to sustain further space exploration. To meet this goal, we will return the space shuttle to flight as soon as possible, consistent with safety concerns and the recommendations of the Columbia Accident Investigation Board. The shuttle's chief purpose over the next several years will be to help finish assembly of the International Space Station. In 2010, the space shuttle, after nearly 30 years of duty, will be retired from service. Our second goal is to develop and test a new spacecraft, the Crew Exploration Vehicle, by 2008 and to conduct the first manned mission no later than 2014. The Crew Exploration Vehicle will be capable of ferrying astronauts and scientists to the space station after the shuttle is retired. But the main purpose of this spacecraft will be to carry astronauts beyond our orbit to other worlds. This will be the first spacecraft of its kind since the Apollo Command Module. Our third goal is to return to the moon by 2020 as the launching point for missions beyond. Beginning no later than 2008, we will send a series of robotic missions to the lunar surface to research and prepare for future human exploration. Using the Crew Exploration Vehicle, we will undertake extended human missions to the moon as early as 2015, with the goal of living and working there for increasingly extended periods of time. Eugene Cernan, who is with us today, the last man to set foot on the lunar surface, said this as he left: "We leave as we came, and God willing, as we shall return, with peace and hope for all mankind." America will make those words come true. Returning to the moon is an important step for our space program. Establishing an extended human presence on the moon could vastly reduce the cost of further space exploration, making possible ever more ambitious missions. Lifting heavy spacecraft and fuel out of the Earth's gravity is expensive. Spacecraft assembled and provisioned on the moon could escape its far lower gravity using far less energy and thus far less cost. Also, the moon is home to abundant resources. Its soil contains raw materials that might be harvested and processed into rocket fuel or breathable air. We can use our time on the moon to develop and test new approaches and technologies and systems that will allow us to function in other more challenging environments. The moon is a logical step toward further progress and achievement. With the experience and knowledge gained on the moon, we will then be ready to take the next steps of space exploration, human missions to Mars and to worlds beyond. Robotic missions will serve as trailblazers, the advance guard to the unknown. Probes, landers, and other vehicles of this kind continue to prove their worth, sending spectacular images and vast amounts of data back to Earth. Yet the human thirst for knowledge ultimately cannot be satisfied by even the most vivid pictures or the most detailed measurements. We need to see and examine and touch for ourselves. And only human beings are capable of adapting to the inevitable uncertainties posed by space travel. As our knowledge improves, we'll develop new power generation, propulsion, life support, and other systems that can support more distant travels. We do not know where this journey will end. Yet we know this: human beings are headed into the cosmos. And along this journey, we'll make many technological breakthroughs. We don't know yet what those breakthroughs will be, but we can be certain they'll come and that our efforts will be repaid many times over. We may discover resources on the moon or Mars that will boggle the imagination, that will test our limits to dream. And the fascination generated by further exploration will inspire our young people to study math and science and engineering and create a new generation of innovators and pioneers. This will be a great and unifying mission for NASA, and we know that you'll achieve it. I've directed Administrator O'Keefe to review all of NASA's current space flight and exploration activities and direct them toward the goals I have outlined. I will also form a commission of private and public sector experts to advise on implementing the vision that I've outlined today. This commission will report to me within 4 months of its first meeting. I'm today naming former Secretary of the Air Force, Pete Aldridge, to be the chair of the commission. Thank you for being here today, Pete. He has tremendous experience in the Department of Defense and the aerospace industry, and he is going to begin this important work right away. We'll invite other nations to share the challenges and opportunities of this new era of discovery. The vision I outlined today is a journey, not a race. And I call on other nations to join us on this journey, in the spirit of cooperation and friendship. Achieving these goals requires a long-term commitment. NASA's current five-year budget is $86 billion. Most of the funding we need for the new endeavors will come from reallocating $11 billion within that budget. We need some new resources, however. I will call upon Congress to increase NASA's budget by roughly $1 billion spread over the next 5 years. This increase, along with the refocusing of our space agency, is a solid beginning to meet the challenges and the goals that we set today. It is only a beginning. Future funding decisions will be guided by the progress that we make in achieving these goals. We begin this venture knowing that space travel brings great risks. The loss of the space shuttle Columbia was less than 1 year ago. Since the beginning of our space program, America has lost 23 astronauts and one astronaut from an allied nation. Men and women who believed in their mission and accepted the dangers. As one family member said, the legacy of Columbia must carry on for the benefit of our children and yours. The Columbia's crew did not turn away from the challenge, and neither will we. Mankind is drawn to the heavens for the same reason we were once drawn into unknown lands and across the open sea. We choose to explore space because doing so improves our lives and lifts our national spirit. So let us continue the journey. May God bless.
President Bush receiving a standing ovation from the staff members of the NASA headquarters here in Washington, D.C. There is also reporters and invited guests in the room. He made reference to the Corps of Astronauts, several members of which are seated in the audience. And the president is now plunging into the crowd and shaking the hands of the blue-uniformed astronauts. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation. NPR's science correspondent Richard Harris is here with us in Studio 3A. And, Richard, we went through the outlines of what the president was expected to say before this, and he did outline several goals, return the shuttle to flight as soon as possible, finish the International Space Station as we promised to do, then retire the shuttle by 2010, develop a new vehicle, the Crew Exploration Vehicle by 2008, a vehicle that would not only return Americans to the space station, but eventually fly them to the moon and, as he later said, to Mars and perhaps worlds beyond. An ambitious program.
Indeed it is, yes. And the Crew Exploration Vehicle would be developed by 2008, but would not actually expect it to fly until 2014. So we're talking about a long time horizon here.
We're speaking about this. We're going to get reaction from members of Congress. And joining us now on the line is Senator Sam Brownback. He sits on the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, a Republican from the state of Kansas. Senator, good of you to be with us today.
Happy to join you, and quite a momentous day for space exploration.
And do you think that this is an achievable goal?
Yes, I do. Matter of fact, I like how he has put it forth. Incremental steps. Here's what we're going to do with the space station, the shuttle, then the moon and beyond. I think that's an achievable set of objectives if we stay focused. And I also like the idea of the commission to really talk about the implementation of this and to get a strong national buy-in. We really need that as well.
And, of course, he appointed Pete Aldridge, the former Secretary of the Air Force, to head that commission. What do you think in terms of the budget? Does this money look, A, reasonable for accomplishing what the president set out to do? And then plan B, of course, is you've got to get Congress to approve that money.
You do. I do think the money is reasonable. My experience with these tells me that generally what you start off on a budget, you're going to have to increase over time to get it done. That's typically the pattern of these. But I think he's outlined it. This is a reasonable pattern. And he said, well, let's also measure the progress and then determine from that point where we will allocate additional resources. I think you will see a strong congressional buy-in. The Congress has been saying for some time, we've been stuck in low space orbit for too long. It's time for a new vision, and the president's laying that out.
As you know, of course, President Bush's father outlined a similar program in 1989, and that one did not take off in Congress.
It didn't. It was a different time, and it was a giant leap type of step. It was, okay, we're going to Mars. And if you do that on that basis, there is just a huge upfront outlay. Here what the president's outlined is, okay, we're going to the moon and beyond, but it's more of an incremental stepped approach. We know we can get to the moon. We've done it before. We will do it with newer, better technology, and we hope that technology takes us on further. I think this is a more practical and a plan that can be followed.
There are, as we were speaking about before you came on, some questions that need to be answered. For example, what would happen to the International Space Station in the gap after the retirement of the American Shuttle program in 2010 and before the CEV, the vehicle projected by President Bush, began to fly? Something like the shuttle is needed to keep the ISS in orbit and may be useful, of course, to help resupply it as well.
It is. Interestingly enough, there are a number of commercial companies that want to bid on ferrying astronauts and supplies to and from the International Space Station. And, of course, the Russian Soyuz vehicle has been the workhorse for a lot of the space station, and that's an old, reliable vehicle that remains there. I think we'll be able to find some cost-effective ways to continue the operation and effectiveness of the International Space Station. I think the key thing here is that we're breaking out of that low space orbit, and we're setting a far more ambitious target. And I think that's fully appropriate, and I think it's important not just from the physical, but from the vision that it sows into the seeds of people, particularly children across the world. This is an important visionary step to take.
Senator Brownback, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling me.
Sam Brownback is a Republican from Kansas. He sits on the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, and he joined us from the capital of Kansas, Topeka. With us now from his home office in Newton, Massachusetts, is Representative Barney Frank, a Democrat, and he sits on the Congressman Frank, good of you to be with us today.
Thank you.
Now, I know you have some reservations about this proposal of President Bush's. Here's a quote attributed to you that was in today's paper. If they want romance, let them buy Daniel Steele books.
Yes, I think to say that I had reservations sort of understates it. I am opposed to committing hundreds of billions of dollars from a federal budget that is already in deep deficit to projects like this. I think we should have great missions. I represent a district in which I have a Superfund site, which this administration has just told us will not get any work done this year. A hazardous waste site, as bad a site as can be, according to EPA, is going to sit uncleaned up for an indefinite period because we've run out of money. We have police officers laid off. We have the president just got Congress to pass a bill for prescription drugs, which inexplicably says to older people on its own terms, we'll help you pay for your drugs until you've spent $2,200 a year, but then the next $1,500 we're not going to help you with. That's not logical. To say, and remember, we are talking zero sum here. We are talking about money that will come out of this pot. I am delighted with what's going on now with the Mars lander. I think that is very important scientific information, and I'm all for it. But sending human beings up there for psychological reasons, for the romance of it, for the drama of it, at the cost of very real needs of people here, it seems to me a very poor choice of priorities.
As you know, many critics said the same sort of things when President Kennedy made his challenge to put a man on the moon by the end of the 1960s.
Yes, and many people say Elvis is still alive, and I'm really influenced by what many people have said at any one time. I would say this, though. We are in a very different situation. When John Kennedy talked about that, we weren't facing trillions of dollars of deficits. We weren't facing a situation in which Social Security was going to be in dire need of assistance and Medicare in dire need of assistance. I am in favor of a space program that is scientifically driven in terms of its choices and which, as we have found, I think, is best done by unmanned space exploration, and we get a great deal of information and bang for our buck. But at a time when we have these other important things pressing on us, when we have a federal budget deficit that is enormous and increasing, you're taking money away. Look, the president, even over the next 5 years, by the way, there's one other thing typical about this. This is the administration that looks for short-term glory and leaves the long-term price to others. The president wants to get credit for this dramatic decision to go to Mars and to put a manned colony on the moon, but he's leaving it to later people to pay for it. Conveniently, the bill, which will be in the hundreds of billions for this, will come after he's left office. So he will get the glory, as he would like to do it. And later on, when we are trying to make Social Security payments and trying to make Medicare payments and trying to deal with other important social needs here on the Earth, we'll have this terrible financial problem, and he'll be sitting home watching.
We're speaking with Representative Barney Frank of Massachusetts. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Congressman Frank, we were just talking with Sam Brownback, Senator Brownback of Kansas, and he said he thought Congress would buy into this. What's your political evaluation?
Well, that may be because we have a Republican Congress now that has been remarkably quiescent by American standards, and they have shown a willingness to follow the president in short-term gratification without paying attention to the long-term price. And that's what's so striking. I know the president is talking about a relatively small amount of increase over the next 5 years, although, you know, he's going to increase the NASA budget by 5%. That comes at the cost of important health care and housing and environmental goals. But the serious cost here, obviously, is a very significant cost in the, I would guess, hundreds of billions for later. And yeah, this Congress may very well decide to do that because there is a great degree of Republican solidarity, and there has been an extraordinary growth in a willingness to do things that feel good in the short term and with a disregard for the longer term consequences. It's inexplicable to me that facing the enormous budget problems we have with Social Security and Medicare in serious trouble, that we would have the president commit to something or have Congress commit to something that's going to cost us hundreds of billions of dollars in the future. He's talked about how he's going to reduce the deficit. Well, you cannot reduce the deficit, meet our Social Security obligations, our Medicare obligations, go forward with the tax cuts he wants, and commit to an additional vast expenditure.
Congressman Frank, thanks very much.
Welcome.
Barney Frank is a Democrat. We spoke with him from his office in Newton, Massachusetts, and still with us here in Studio 3A is Richard Harrison. Richard, as you listen to the two members of Congress, Senator Brownback and Congressman Frank, talk about the money, what did you think?
Well, I think there is going to be a lot of discussion in Congress, and I think one of the big questions is where is the $11 billion going to come from out of the existing NASA budget, because there are certainly congressmen who think that the science programs that NASA are doing are very valuable and should not be raided at the in order to create new things within NASA. I think the real issue is, you know, getting down to brass tacks, when we actually see the numbers. Will people be able to make the compromises that would be necessary to do this with a minimal budget increase?
Obviously, we're not seeing details, but what kinds of things might have to be sacrificed?
Well, it's not at all evident to me what would have to be sacrificed unless you scale back some of the science programs at NASA, or NASA also does some aeronautics programs that involve design of aircraft as opposed to spacecraft, and those may be at risk as well, I suppose. It's not evident how you could take the money out of the existing human space program and reallocate it. There's certainly a lot of need to spend that money to get the space shuttle back flying again and to maintain the International Space Station.
I think we may have time to squeeze in one call, and let's go to George. And George is with us from Mount Hood, Oregon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, George. You're on the air.
I'm happy with the program that President Bush has outlined. Barney Frank is right in wondering whether future political strategists, congressmen, will support it. We had the capability, we still have the capability, scientific capability, engineering capability to do this. We could have started in 1970, but the Congress had no guts. The Congress was unfortunately underexcited about the idea of going to the moon. There were proposals for a moon base follow-on, which were made before the first manned flight went to the moon. Grumman Aircraft, who built the LEM landing module, had a proposal for LEM trucks, unmanned vehicles, which would carry supplies to the moon zeroing in and landing by landing markers put down by the astronauts who were already on the moon. You could have emptied those things out of the equipment that they brought, linked them together, and you would have had a moon colony, a moon laboratory established by 1975.
Richard Harris, get a response from you. Is what George outlining, is that reasonable?
Well, I'm sure NASA will be going back over many of these ideas. The past is full of ideas, commissions, studies, groups, think tanks. Everybody has thought about ways of doing this, and that sounds like an intriguing one. And I think that there will be a lot of other ones as well. And the problem is never been lack of ideas. The issue has always been, has it been worth it as a national priority?
And political will. George, I'm afraid we're out of time for this segment, but you raise interesting questions about the political will and the sustainability of it. And though the public opinion polls were taken before the president spoke today, it's safe to say, these are sometimes hard to judge, but it's safe to say that the public has not been wildly enthusiastic about the proposal to return to the moon and then perhaps go on to Mars. But thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And Richard Harris, NPR science correspondent, good to have you back on Talk of the Nation, as
it's
always.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to Talk of the Nation. Today we included a live broadcast of the president's remarks in terms of his announcing his determination to put Americans back into space, back onto the moon, to Mars and beyond. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.